Welcome to the SIS Off the Charts Football Podcast. I am your host, Bryce Rossler, and we are joined today by a very special guest, my good friend, Deontay Lee, formerly of The Athletic, current staff writer at 33rdteam.com. Deontay, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. Glad to be on. I know we were talking before we jumped on about how it's been a while since we've got to podcast together, but you know this from being, you know, in person and around me, how much I regard the work that you do and who you are and the way you've grown in this space as somebody in the analytics and football analysis world.
I appreciate the kind words. I will have to cut a check. I don't have checks, so I'll need to go to the bank. I appreciate it. I am very excited about this episode to fire some praise back at Deontay. I think Deontay is one of the best football minds in the writing space right now, specifically when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. And today we're going to be talking sort of draft stuff, but we're going off the beaten path a little bit. I wanted to talk today about what the defensive metagame is in the NFL, sort of how defenses are adapting to the current offensive climate around the league and how that affects what they may be looking for in prospects in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with the defensive stuff first. But for the people who might not know Deontay, give people a background of your work in the space.
Yeah. So I guess working from most recent backwards, you know, being at The Athletic the last 2 years, I've really been kind of hyper-focused on the draft. But prior to that, I was working at Pro Football Focus in 2021, really kind of analyzing the sport, trying to take a look at trends. Obviously, you know, Seth and I had a podcast called Too High, where we spent a lot of time in college and the NFL talking about the way that the context of football was changing, right? And I think that a lot of the conversations that were starting around that point in time really kind of come to bear fruit today. When you look at the way the NFL game is played, when you look at the way that the college game is played, then, you know, in my free time, I coach football too. So I'm spending a lot of time kind of staring at this stuff directly. And I think that that's influenced my view on this quite a bit.
Deontay is being humble about his coaching experience. He also failed to mention that he played a bit of ball himself. That probably feels like many moons ago, but
yeah,
playing linebacker at Sacramento State. So Deontay knows what he's talking about. I'm gonna let him do most of the heavy lifting. The listeners of the pod know that I like my guests to carry me. But my sort of thought on what the meta in the NFL right now defensively is,
mm-hmm.
is teams are really trying to do a lot of disguise structurally. Like there's a lot of too high presentation pre-snap and teams like to rotate in and out of that. The best teams are more flexible, I would say, than anything. It's because, you know, I think people really started to, at least in like football popular culture, become interested in defensive schematics was with the Legion of Boom Seahawks. Like
right.
The cover three was the huge talk, and recently now people are talking about quarters. But I think it's less about having like a rigid system, and more teams are, I mean, you hear defensive coordinators say it all the time, like we want to be multiple.
Right.
So teams aren't necessarily majoring in any one thing. They want to have as many tools at their disposal as possible. And I think if you look at some of the better teams, you know, the Chiefs are a good example. Like 1 week they'll be basically all rush four and the next they'll be super blitz heavy. So
right.
It's right now it's a lot about disguise and adaptability. And like, yeah, we've seen an uptick in quarters league wide, but it's not like one way to view that is like teams like playing quarters. And the other way to view it is like we're moving more towards being 50-50 middle field open, middle field close. So
right.
that was a bit of a rambling prompt, but that's sort of how I see it. Do you see it similarly or am I way off base here?
No, I think that you're right on the head there. Like I think it's easy when we see trend lines start to change to assume that the new thing is replacing the old thing. And the truth of the matter is like, we're really just talking about degrees of change and distribution rates, right? So if you look, you know, if you have access to the data, you can look and see like, yes, the cover three rate is going down a bit, right? Yes, cover one rates are going down a bit, but it's not like it's fallen off of a map, right? There is still a space where playing, you know, middle of field close is necessary, if not imperative, you know, to stop certain teams. But I think that what you're seeing, and I think where the conversation needs to be framed properly, is more like, because we get more early down passes, we are going to see more early down defensive structures that have that in mind. And that's where quarters grows. That's where cover six grows. That's where you see more cover two on early downs. And that's really what I think it comes down to, right? It's trying to take away explosive passes. And I think that, you know, if you're a coach or if you're in the football world and you're trying to analyze what it is that takes away explosive offense, and that's what offenses are playing for now, are big plays. The easiest answer is to try to put more of a roof on what a team is doing offensively. And, you know, I think that that's why we're seeing a little bit more of the split safety shells. But there's a reason why we call first and second down, base downs, pass and run downs, mixed downs, right? It's because you have to deal with the threat of either or, especially, you know, in the RPO world, in a heavy play action world, and more of a spread out offense world. You have to honor the threat of the pass. So it's really not that the game of football is being transformed per se, as much as I think that we are now in an era where defenses can better acknowledge what offenses are trying to do and create simple answers for themselves to take away what an offense is doing best. And I think that really feeds to your point in terms of being varied, right? So we're talking coverage shell. You mentioned it as far as like using pressures. You don't see as many, you know, five-man rush playing fire zone coverage. You don't see as many max blitzes, meaning I'm playing cover zero as often. But those are still pieces of a defense. I think that what we're seeing now is defenses are better at taking a varied approach and understanding that you do kind of have to take a modular approach to defending offenses. It's not about having like a rote dedication to, hey, I learned to play under front defense. We're going to play cover three on first and second down, cover two on third down, and that's the only way I'm ever thinking about it, right? And there are people who do that. Dan Quinn has been doing that for the last decade, right? So I'm not saying that that's useless. It's just a matter of, I think we're seeing more defensive play callers learning that, hey, the same way the offenses have borrowed from all these different trees in terms of minds and schemes and structures, I think we're seeing more defenses do that as well. And that's why I think the distribution rates from coverages, fronts, pressures, and the like are spreading out a little bit more evenly across the board.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you said about putting a roof on the offense, because I like the way you frame that, because I think some of the discourse is that quarters is like you're trying to stop the pass. And as you alluded to, that's the case, but it's not just like you can throw quarters at any passing concept and stop it. Like, everything, it's rock, paper, scissors. Everything has something that beats it. And to your point, if you were to look at heat map, like next gen heat maps, over the last couple of years, you start to see targets really become localized in like the curl flat areas, right, and in the short hook. And those are the areas that quarters is typically weaker to. But like you said, you're not seeing as many passes deep outside the numbers. You're not seeing teams hit seams and posts as much as they used to.
Right. I think that right there is where the conversation is, right? It's trying to change the distribution of what offenses are doing. When you're playing single high coverage, the weaknesses are easy to point out, right? You're weak up the seams and you're one-on-one out on the perimeter. And that's where a lot of the explosive plays happen, you know? You think about all the play action bootlegs throwing over routes that Sean McVay and the Rams are doing over a half decade ago. You don't see as much of that now because defenses aren't running the types of coverages on early downs that would incentivize an offense to do so. I think now, like you said, we're seeing more quarters, more split safety shells. They're spending more time running coverages to take away in breakers, that take away the seams. Clouding coverages, which means you got a safety over the top on the outside if you're playing cover two shells, which means there's less available up the sideline, which is why, to your point with heat maps, you're going to see more throws in that curl area, in that curl flattish area. You're going to see more throws over the, you know, in that kind of short over the middle of the field, those check down ranges, which is going to mean that, you know, defenses have to get better at making tackles at the catch point and not giving up yards at the catch. And that means that offenses are going to be prioritizing guys who can catch the ball and create after the throw. So that's where I think that football is at now from a meta perspective.
Yeah, I like that you pointed out tackling, because football is still ultimately about blocking and tackling. The Ravens, for example, were a very good tackling defense last year, exceptional at limiting yards after the catch. We saw that sort of gave, that's part of the reason they matched up well in that 49ers game.
Right.
Offense completely, or not completely, but largely predicated on yards after the catch. And even when people do think about tackling, they tend to think about in terms of like run defense.
Right.
But you absolutely have to be able to tackle as a defensive back in space. It's so important right now.
I think that, you know, to add to the tackling point that we're making, I think that that also has an effect on personnel, right? Like if you're spending less time in single high, in man coverage, now that fifth defensive back, the guy who's playing in the slot, you want guys that have Sam Batter skill sets. So one of the reasons why, in my opinion, the Ravens are as good at tackling as they've been is that the guy that they can put in the slot looks like an old prototypical Sam linebacker in Kyle Hamilton, right? You have a 6'4", 230-pound guy with range who can go get to the ball and make tackles. And then they've prioritized in their defense getting guys who are great at ranging to the ball and making one-on-one tackles. Roquan Smith was that. Patrick Queen, you know, for all of his struggles in Baltimore, one of the things that he always could do well was go track the ball out in space because he's a good athlete, right? And I think that you're going to see more and more defenses make it a point of saying, we need to find Sam linebacker skill sets or, you know, that kind of strong safety skill set at that position rather than just getting pure cover guys. And that is, I think, a reflection of what we're saying here in terms of where the ball is going, what defenses are trying to take away, and the premium or priority that's being placed defensively on not giving up yards after the catch.
If you are trying to put, to go back again to what you said about putting a roof on the offense and limit explosives, if you're forcing the ball to be thrown 5-6 yards downfield,
right,
but you aren't tackling and you're letting the receiver pop off for 10 yards after the fact,
right,
that's not much difference than, I mean, you're right back where you started, like hitting a big dig and the safety tackles him or
right,
whatever at the catch.
Right.
You have to be able to come up and tackle. And this is sort of a segue into another interesting thing is teams are playing match all the time.
Right.
And people, I see people sometimes say, like, why are they not playing match coverage? Like, there's a reason to just play things like zone.
Right.
And the two big reasons, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or add if I'm missing something, are you get vision on the quarterback. So you're going to get your turnovers in zone most of the time, like, or you have a higher potential for getting turnovers in zone.
Right.
And two is you have people that can break on the ball, come up and make a tackle.
I would say, yeah, I mean, those are the two fundamental pieces of it. And then the thing that I probably did not appreciate enough until I started talking to NFL coaches about this is the fact that if you're playing match coverage, there are distributions where you're just going to be one-on-one anyway, right? And in the NFL, if you're going to play one-on-one coverage, you probably want to do so with some kind of help over the top. And if you don't have help over the top, you probably want to be sending additional pressure at the quarterback, right? Like, there are things, as a high school football coach, right? Like, there are things that I can do from a coverage perspective where we're going to match routes and make an assumption that the quarterback is not good enough to identify where the one-on-one is, where we're vulnerable at, and punish us for it. In the NFL, by formation, by personnel, by speed, by route concept, there are ways that teams can manufacture problematic one-on-one matchups for a defense. And you've got to be mindful of that as a play caller, right? And if you're going to play tight match coverage, you might want to think about just playing two man instead, where you're taking some of the conditional thinking of, okay, if this route does this, then I'm going to play it this way out of that equation, because these are guys who are running 4.4s and 4.3s, right? And quarterbacks that can play, you know, a precise game. And I think that that's the reason why you see a little bit more of your quote unquote vision coverage, your soft zone coverage. You want to get more vision on the quarterback. You want to give some relief to your player, to your defensive players. You don't want them to be in a world where you've got to play cover one and two man or cover zero. And then when we're playing cover two, you've got to match up the seam. You've got to match up the sideline. When you're playing quarters, you've got to play bump and run coverage on the outside still. You don't necessarily want to be in that world because then you become one-dimensional as a defense. So I think that, like, what you want to avoid in terms of being one-dimensional with match coverage is that you know, it, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you've always got to match a guy up the sideline and up the seams if you're playing cover two or you're playing quarters or you're playing cover six, right? Because you're not giving guys any relief. You're allowing an offense to dictate to you where your matchups are going to be, what routes you're getting, and how you're going to play them versus playing vision coverage where we can say, hey, from a general perspective, we're going to have body presence in these areas, and we're going to make it incumbent upon the quarterback to have to solve the problem instead of maybe giving them answers or telling them where they're going with the football.
And use the comparison to high school, but I think this is also true of college because the Ashes are so much different.
Right.
Like in college, I know in high school it's even crazier. It's probably backwards the way it is. But in college, the hashes are almost twice as wide as they are in NFL. And so, like Deontay's talking about, you're creating one-on-ones and match coverage some places. And a lot of the times that's deep down the sideline. But not every college quarterback is going to make a far hash throw deep down the sideline.
Right.
And that's especially true in high school. But in NFL, just about everyone can do that.
And the ball's in the middle of the field, which means that there's just greater access to it, right?
Yep. So we've spent a lot of time talking about coverage. You mentioned earlier that the way teams have approached pressure is different. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I would say, and this isn't necessarily a one-size-fits-all thing or applies to every team, but I do think that what you're going to continue to see, because teams are varying their looks on the back end, you're seeing more teams that are creating untraditional or non-conventional four-man rushes, right? I don't want to always draw reference to Baltimore, and it's not just them, but they happen to be the best at doing this. But you really want to create these unconventional or non-traditional four-man rush patterns, right? In the Legion of Boom days, I say that like it's 25 years ago, in the last defensive meta where this was really relevant, right? We're talking about the Legion of Boom. You're talking about playing four down, cover three, single high defense a bunch. You can kind of line up and play for penetration and just let guys go when you're playing more kind of like your one gap defense, letting guys be aggressive. Because you're playing more soft zone shells, you're playing with lighter boxes, you want to try to control what the offense can do with the protection by using stunts, using twists, using simulated pressures where you're sending a defensive back or a linebacker and dropping a guy at the line of scrimmage out in the coverage. So I think you're going to see more of that as well, because you have to try to find some way to manipulate offenses in a way where you are not risking giving up explosive plays, right? So it's similar to play action in the RPO game, right? Where you still want to have access to the passing game, but you don't necessarily want to send five guys out on the route and leave your quarterback vulnerable in terms of protection. The same idea exists in terms of simulated pressures, twists, and stunts defensively, right? You're going to take a chance to maybe get a free rusher while not coming at the expense of your coverage show. And I think that we're going to see more and more of that on the defensive side of the ball as we go forward in the league.
So what goes into actually installing this? Because it's very easy for me to sit on the couch and say a defense should do more of this, but everything has a cost. Like everything right. You're putting in has to be done for a reason, and the juice has to be worth the squeeze. So
right.
My follow-up question to you would be, how do teams actually go about teaching this stuff?
Yeah.
So how much of it is it just repetition and practice, and how much of it is personnel? Like maybe we don't feel we have ends that we can drop, or we don't like our linebackers as blitzers. Can you talk about those elements a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's the majority of it is the personnel piece, the latter thing that you brought up, right? It's, do we have an outside linebacker / edge type that we feel like we can drop into the flat and they can hold their own if the ball gets checked down in terms of going to make a tackle? So yeah, I think that personnel is the number one consideration there, right? You kind of made reference to the first piece of it, which is, do we have a guy at the line of scrimmage that can drop out into coverage? That's number one. Number two is going to be, do we have a second level defender or a third level defender that can rush and actually affect the game as a pass rusher that makes it worth taking them, you know, out of your coverage shell? And then the next piece will be schematics. Now, everything else, once you get the personnel piece settled, if you do have the players that can do it, everything else from there is about schematics. And I would say it has more to do with what you can manipulate in the protection scheme or the run blocking scheme than it does the actual passing concept, right? Or just trying to get unblocked pressure. You want to affect the pocket in a way where, hey, we want to make a quarterback think that he's hot off of his left side because we know that the protection is set to the right and we can manufacture a check down here. And that allows us to play more single high instead of, you know, just trying to play cover one or cover three and giving this guy clear vision where he knows who's coming and who's dropping, right? It's a matter of, hey, how can we keep the back in the protection? Can we blitz a backer that's over the back when it looks like maybe they'll be matched up one-on-one, and instead of check releasing, now this guy's staying in here to protect the quarterback and we're still playing a soft coverage shell behind it where there's not as much stress vertically or laterally in the coverage. So that's really where I think simulated pressure is, where the decision-making complex comes from with simulated pressures is, do you have the guys at the line of scrimmage who can drop? Do you have DBs and skill position players or linebackers who can affect you from a who can affect an offense from a rushing perspective? And then what is your actual goal? Are you trying to get an offense to throw hot? Are you just trying to keep the back in the protection? You know, are you just trying to throw something exotic out on third down and see if you can trick a quarterback into throwing a ball someplace where you're going to have a defender dropping into? So there, it's definitely multi-layered. And to the point that you made, that is a big reason why not every team can do it. If you're built like the Cleveland Browns, nobody's going to drop Myles Garrett out into the flat so that way you can blitz Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, right? That's going to be a very special situation. You want your four down guys that can go get after the quarterbacks, go get after the quarterback. If you're a Baltimore, a team that's like, we're just playing more of a rotation at the edge spot, you might be a little bit more willing to send a guy at the second or third level and drop, you know, a Kyle Van Noy or a Jadeveon Clowney and say, hey, if we can just affect the protection, if we can affect the back going out into the route, if we can make a quarterback throw hot, that increases our chances of being. So you might drop a Kyle Van Noy or Jadeveon Clowney out into the flat, or you might have them play a piece of your cover two defense and it not come at the cost of your coverage distribution, right? And you're definitely not giving up premium pass rush because you don't have a Myles Garrett, you don't have a Micah Parsons, right? So a lot of that comes down to your defensive build and what you feel like is and isn't possible, which is a big reason why you don't see every team run a simulated pressures. The four down teams, I think you'll see more twists and stunts and maybe trying to find smaller, you know, pass rush like defensive tackles that can get up the field. And if not that, trying to find edge rushers that you can kick inside. Yeah, so you can kick a guy inside and maybe let that guy be the fulcrum for your twists and your stunts instead of trying to send like your nickel off the edge or trying to send your corner off an edge or trying to blitz a backer and drop an in. You can try to play with the pick. You can try to play with the protection by changing up who's your interior rushers, who's your edge rushers, moving guys around, creating those mugged up fronts, those bare fronts where you can dictate at the line of scrimmage and use twists and stunts to try to take care of matchups or take advantage of matchups, I should say. So that's where I think you'll see the game at. There are certain teams that can run simulated pressures. That's more your odd front, outside linebackers on the edge types. And then you're going to have your even front teams where you'll see maybe more bare fronts, more guys walked up at the line of scrimmage and then dropping out rather than blitzing from depth. So that way you can keep your top four pass rushers in the pass rush.
So my interpretation of this, and you can correct me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but this is not just, we've talked about body types, but this is not just about athletic ability, like skill set factors in here too. You talk like, if you wanted to drop, you use the Myles Garrett example. If you wanted to drop Myles Garrett, he could do it.
Right.
But
right.
You don't want to sacrifice the pass rush ability. So when teams are looking at personnel, how much of this is, we think this guy is capable of doing this versus like an innate skill set?
That's a good question. Roster building strategies from teams is probably the best signal as to how they view generating a four-man rush, right? And whether they want to be varied in who's rushing and who's dropping. Using Cleveland as one example, they're spending money at edge. That is a premium position for them. They want to bring in guys that can add to a straight ahead four-man rush and maybe try to change up the picture on the back end. Division rival Baltimore, on the other hand, they're spreading their money a little bit more evenly across positions, which is why you see them use Kyle Hamilton as part of their four-man rush at times. That's why you see Patrick Queen or Roquan Smith be part of their four-man rush at times. Then they're dropping outside linebackers out in the coverage. That's a little bit more of a holistic approach, right? And that's not to say that any one is more correct or makes more sense than the other. We saw a Bengals team a few years ago on a Super Bowl run that was playing four-down defense, not really mixing up who was rushing and who was dropping, and just playing, you know, different cover shells behind it, and they found success, right? Versus a Kansas City who on passing downs or when they believe pass is coming or they're facing a team that has a highly explosive offense in terms of yards after the catch or pushing the ball downfield, they are going to mix up who rushes and who drops a little bit more. They are going to put guys up at the line of scrimmage if they need to try to manipulate protections. And that's what it comes down to, right? Is that if you have elite edge rushers, there's no need to send non-edge rushing talent as part of your four-man rush, right? I feel like that would be overthinking the game a bit, right? And which is why you don't see a Cleveland. I think if you're a team that does not have that type of premium talent on the edge, you're probably a little bit more open to mixing up your four-man rush patterns. And all of this really does is try to give offenses a different look. So when you are playing your softer zone shells behind it, quarterbacks aren't able to quickly identify and punish it as easily as they have in the last half decade or so.
It's interesting that you brought the positional spending and roster building approach and value into this equation, because I think about the positional discourse about linebackers as an example. Over the past couple of years, we've seen people, this is a very extreme example, so I'm sort of strawmanning here, but people have said, like, play safeties at linebacker.
Right.
The more measured approach is that you shouldn't pay linebackers big money. But I feel like with all that they're being asked to do right now, you can't sort of skimp on that. So to bring it back to the value question is, are there certain positions right now that you feel are currently undervalued given where the defensive landscape is going relative to what we've seen teams spend money on the past 3-4 years?
It's hard to say undervalued. I think that linebacker, we're seeing kind of a valley in linebacker value right now because there just aren't many guys in the league who can do the job, right? I think that that position is somewhere in between running back and tight end in the sense of you're probably looking for like hyper-specific roles within your offense. And then if you find a transformative guy, you build your defense around having that transformative guy, right? So Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw are two transformative linebackers. You don't have to think very hard about how you want to play defense when those are the guys in the core of your defense, right? You want to allow those guys to play from depth, go get after the ball in the passing game and the running game, and you play a little bit more traditionally. I think that one of the things that we need to continue to look out for as we analyze the game is how teams evolve their use of the linebacker position, how hyper-specific teams view guys in certain roles, right? Are you going to see more teams, instead of looking at like your prototypical Sam, Mike, and Will, you know, is it going to be more of, hey, we want to get a linebacker who's purely a plugger? I think Kansas City is really good for this, right? Do we want to get a guy who's purely a downhill run player and a guy who's a little bit more comfortable out in space playing in coverage? And we will just mix up and rotate which linebacker is on the field in accordance to what an offense is trying to do. And that's not to say that that's any easier to go and find a star, right? It's hard enough to find three guys that you can feel comfortable at the position in any capacity, you know, let alone three guys who, you know, provide a hyper-specific role at plus value. So I don't know if I want to say it's undervalued as much as it is that like the context of the position is changing. And I think that the money spent is reflecting the fact that the NFL is not yet comfortable with how that position is changing around the league and within specific schemes and role fits. And until we get an opportunity to evolve at that position, I think that that's what we're going to see. So I would say if there is an undervalued spot, I would argue it's safety, right? Because those are the guys that protect linebackers. If you have an opportunity to go spend at safety, let's say you're not spending on an all-pro corner, all-pro edge rusher, and you can smooth your spending out across several positions, you want to bring in two solid safeties who allow you to change the defensive picture and allow you to take some stress off of linebackers and corners plates. That would be a position I would look at attacking if we weren't building a roster towards getting premium value out of your corners and your edge rushers in a more traditional sense, the way that we've seen football teams be built in the NFL over time.
Yeah. Do you think that goes back to sort of the diversification of defensive schemes? Because like we keep using the Legion of Boom as an example, but back in those days, to show how you and I are aging rapidly,
right?
It was safety seemed to be viewed as like, are they the Earl Thomas Kim Chancellor example,
right?
Like you have a guy in the post and you have a guy in the hook,
right?
And it's just not that straightforward right now. There's so much more they're asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you potentially end up matched up on receivers and in quarter structures. There's a lot of different techniques you have to play. It's not just I'm a deep corners player. Like
right.
Sometimes you have to poach across the trip side. Sometimes you're clouding. Like there's a bunch of different things that they can do in these split field structures. Mm-hmm. on top of what they are asked to do when you're playing middle field closed.
Right. I think that so what you're hitting on, in my opinion, kind of folds back into what I was saying, right? I think that the idea is that those two positions are starting to evolve to build off of what you're saying with the Legion of Boom and using those examples. Obviously, you're talking about all pros and Pro Bowl level players, mm-hmm. right? But at the heart of it, you're talking about hyper-specificity and role, right? We are drafting Kim Chancellor because we want a guy near the line of scrimmage, lined up in, you know, dropping down over tight ends to help us deal with that. And we want a guy that specifically plays in the middle of the field, right? That is a specific build within your defense. And what did you see in that defense was going to draft these highly versatile linebackers, a Bobby Wagner who can match up with a bunch of different body types and take away a lot of air in the middle of the field. So you could be a little bit more specific with your safeties. I think that when we're talking about positional value, because it's so difficult to field linebackers who can do two to three different things from a coverage and run fit perspective, you probably want to look at the safety position now as we need guys, to your point, that know how to drop to a half just as well as they can poach a crosser coming back from the trip side, just as well as they can drop down into the box versus 3-by-1 and help match up on a running back that's running option routes coming out of the backfield. That is where I think the game is more trending towards. We're not going to see enough Fred Warners, Roquan Smiths. You're not going to see enough guys like Tremaine Edmonds, who at his best can take away a lot of space athletically. You're not going to get a lot of opportunities to go get those guys. And I think that the learning curve at that position is continuing to steepen the more spread out that football gets at the professional level. So that just puts more strain on linebackers. And the more strain you see at a particular position, the more you're going to want to use other roles within the defense to give those guys relief. And that's why I would probably lean more in the direction of let's go get safeties that aren't specific, but are more versatile that you can change up the picture with. So that way you can protect the guys that are close to the line of scrimmage and coverage.
Do you think the issue with linebacker is a scarcity of body types issue, or do you think it's a developmental issue in college, or what would you attribute?
I don't know if you can extricate one from the other, honestly. I think that it's a combination of those two factors. You know, obviously you and I are, you know, talking a lot with other people in this field, you know, in the football analysis field, you know, and every February, you know, when we're in Indianapolis or looking at guys' weigh-ins at the combine or at their pro days, it's hard not to remark upon the fact that these guys are getting smaller because as the game gets more spread out, it's harder to get those big body types on the field. And I think it's easy to assume that because guys are getting lighter, getting smaller, getting faster, that means that they're more capable. There's a lot of stress on that position, period. I don't know. And I don't know if it's just as simple as a body type issue. I just think that spatially, there's more on their plate now than there ever has been before. And in a way, I think that we have to consider that in roster building and building schemes around this position, because it's just going to be more and more difficult to find guys that can play out in space and tackle, right? Like I was a big Isaiah Simmons believer in 2018, 2019, right? And there was a lot of reason to look at that guy's tape at Clemson and say, oh, he can do so much in coverage. He's a great athlete, right? Sub-4.4 guy, 6'4", safety type playing linebacker. And then you realize there are certain fundamental pieces of the linebacker position that a guy like that wasn't necessarily equipped to meet, or the requirements he wasn't necessarily equipped to meet at the pro level. It doesn't mean that he's not a good athlete. It doesn't mean that he can't cover. It just means, especially as the game evolves in the passing game, where you can't assume that a guy that can cover can also fit outside zone. And there are not many positions in football where we are throwing the weight of being a good run, you know, a good player in the running game and passing game to the degree that we ask linebackers to. So I just think that the position is just in a tough spot. And I don't know if I have a clean answer quite yet on how you go about addressing it without schematically trying to take as much off your plate as possible.
Yeah, it's going back to the quarters example, it's vastly different. The mic in a lot of these quarter shells is vastly different than playing the hook in cover three. Like, there are a lot of circumstances, especially because teams are going to try like these hot, like when you're expecting quarters, you're going to try to stretch the defense like low and underneath horizontally. So a lot of the times what happens is a linebacker ends up on a receiver.
Right.
The way the distribution plays out. And I know there's a million ways you can play it, but that's tough. That's really tough.
Right. And then you've got, you know, and that matchup right there, now you are adding the stress, not only schematically of I've got to deal with all of this lateral stress in a passing concept. You mentioned the personnel problems, right? It's one thing to just be guarding a tight end or to just be taking air away from a tight end. Offenses are so good now at condensing splits and putting you in a position where now your second or third best linebacker has to deal with Puka Nacua giving him lateral stress. And that's a guy that can catch and create after the catch, you know, that can create after the catch as well. So not only is it going to be a difficult cover, now I'm being asked to make a solo tackle against a guy who can break my tackle pretty easily, right? And that's just not something that we were really ever asking of this position at any other point in time outside of special situations. So it's, you don't want to infantilize the position, right? I don't want to treat these guys like they just can't handle the asks of playing pro football, but we have to be realistic, I think, in judging this position. And I think that we've got to continue to push forward. I was speaking, you know, as an analyst and somebody who exists in the space from a coaching perspective, we have to continue to push to find different ways to protect these guys in ways you don't have to consider for corners, right? At the end of the day, if you've got great corners and you can play quarters all day now you can really protect your linebackers personnel-wise, you know, because you're squeezing so much of the field. Or you can play more cover two if you've got good corners, good safeties, and they can take a lot of the air away from the sidelines. And there's a lot of value in that. Now it's just a matter of, are your guys going to be good enough to handle that stress over the middle of the field, those high lows, you know, dealing with crossers, dealing with dig routes, taking the air out of those types of situations, you know, those types of route concepts and progressions. That's where a lot of the position is being played at right now. And it's not just as simple as what a guy's 40 and short shuttle time is. There's a lot of feel that has to go into that, especially when you have to consider that teams can get into 11 personnel and still run outside zone at you very effectively. It's not an easy undertaking in the least.
Yeah, I like that you used the example of corners protecting the linebackers, because I've made allusions to it, but there's a bunch of different ways you can play quarters. But if you're just keeping the corner on one, like the outside most receiver,
right,
that has a ripple effect. And there's a lot less a linebacker has to worry about if he could just completely eliminate that as a possibility.
Right.
Like, my corner is always going to have one. You know, you might have fast three rules, but it just, there's less stress points.
Right. I think about the Broncos defense when Ejiro Evero was calling it, you know, and really when it's at its peak. You have a corner like Patrick Surtain that can take away the sideline on one end of the field. And you've got Justin Simmons as a safety who can play over the top, you know, away from a guy like Surtain. You just took so much stress off the linebacker's plate in terms of what they have to play, what they're responsible for, that now you can get plus value, right? You can find hidden value in that position in a way where now I don't have to go try to get a Roquan Smith level of player. You don't have to go get a Jordan Brooks. You don't have to go pay bigger money than you might like to at that position to take the stress out of the defense. So, you know, and I think that this all this revolves around where we started this conversation, which is that defenses have to play more varied now in order to take away what offenses are doing. And in kind, if you're playing more varied, that means that you need to build your defense in a way that allows for that variability. And you need to take something off, some stress off the plate of positions that are vulnerable. The middle of the field is very vulnerable right now for defenses. And if you've got guys that can play with depth, that can take away those windows in the middle of the field as second level defenders, that's awesome, right? Because you're assuming that these are guys who can also fit the run. When you don't have those guys, now it becomes a priority of the highest order now in terms of roster building to make sure that you've got safeties, you've got slot defenders, and you've got at least one corner that can really squeeze the field and make it easier on those guys so they can play more downhill. Because the less that they're able to play downhill, the more that they have to worry about playing in space, the harder it is to fit the run, the harder it is to protect them in terms of matchups, and the less you can do defensively, right? You think about some of the defenses that really struggle in zone coverages over the last few years. And what I would say is a lot of those teams probably don't play as varied as they would like to, right? I've been watching the Lions the last couple of years because I've liked Aaron Glenn from his time in New Orleans, and I expected that defense to look a particular kind of way. And you look the last couple of years and you see the fact that they'd give up more explosive plays than you would expect for a guy who came from Dennis Allen's defense, was really good at playing aggressive football and taking away throwing windows. And you're watching and you see, well, when you don't have a corner that can take away the sideline, when you don't have great safety play all the time, and you don't have linebackers that can take away the middle of the field, well, there are only so many options. So you see a team that's playing a lot of cover one, and now we're back to, again, that where we opened this conversation is, if you're playing a lot of cover one, if you're playing a lot of cover three, you're playing simpler defenses. Offenses are better than ever at picking out where you're weak and attacking that, not just for effectiveness before explosive. And it's hard to live down after down in that kind of world. And then you get pushed into places where you've got to blitz more, which means you're really doubling down now on playing high variance defense. And I don't think that the most successful defenses of this point in time, in this era, and as we continue to be in this highly effective passing on early downs era in football, you are not going to see the high variance teams defensively find as much success as they did a decade and a half to 20 years ago.
Yeah, and the rules are just so skewed towards offense. Like,
there's also that.
If you're 50-50 on defense, like, all things being equal, the offense is winning one-for-one trades.
Right.
Like, you can't just live in, I win a rep, you win a rep as a defense.
Right.
Because the value proposition isn't equal.
Right. I would say that this is probably the closest that we've seen to the fact, I think that we are probably closer than we've ever been in football to actually having more 50-50 propositions. And to your point, you see how often things skew in favor of offense when there are 50-50 propositions, right? So much in terms of what's allowed contact-wise, so much of what's allowed in terms of tackling and physicality has been mitigated, if not taken out of the game, to allow more even playing field for offense. And when you allow an even playing field here, what you're really incentivizing is creating more opportunities for offenses to win. And to your point, those one-for-one trades don't really play out in a way where a defensive win can happen at the same degree as an offense's, right?
A defensive win is like, we stop them for a 3-yard run.
3 yards.
And some win is we just hit a skinny for 17 yards.
Exactly.
We have a new set of downs.
Right.
It's like our good friend Chris Vassar says, offense messes up, they get to punt. I mess up, the marching band is playing.
Exactly.
So I want to touch on one position we haven't talked about a whole lot, the defensive interior.
Yeah.
The way we've talked about it so far, you talked about safeties protecting linebackers,
mm-hmm.
and that's sort of upside down. Like, most people typically think of the defensive interior as what protects linebackers.
Right.
So can you expand upon what teams are looking for in the defensive interior and how that can sort of be a conduit to other areas?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I would say the relationship between those three position groups, defensive tackle, linebacker, and safety, like there's an
interesting spine, right?
Right. You call it the spine of the defense. And there's like an interesting kind of push-pull kind of mechanism that happens in terms of what you have on the roster versus what it allows you to do with the other guys up the spine. So the way that I would say it is, or how I would draw it up if I was diagramming it, is that defensive tackles protect safeties in the sense that the better you are with your defensive tackles, the more two high shells you can play. In turn, the more of that you can do, the more you can protect linebacker, right? So that's the way that I kind of see one position seeding the other. And that's where I would start defensively. Again, all things being equal, assuming that I have the resources to go make it happen and I've got equal options in terms of quality at each of those position groups, I'm probably going to go get defensive tackles first because you want to stop the run with your front four guys. You don't want to have to blitz the run if you can help it. You don't want to play five down fronts to stop the run, especially in this era. I think, you know, obviously you would know better than I would, but when I turn on football on Sundays and I see teams getting the bare fronts, I can almost guarantee the fact that the second or third time you show an offense that on a drive or within a couple of possessions, they're going to hit you for an explosive play, right? Because you're over invested at the line of scrimmage on an early down, right? So you want to get two guys, maybe three guys in your typical odd front where you're really still rushing four and one of your outside backers is dropping. You want to get those guys who can stop the run at the line of scrimmage, not give up explosive runs, not create gaping holes that put stress on your safeties and linebackers in the run fit. So I would say from a body type perspective, you're going to see less and less of teams wanting to find Aaron Donald types. Not that those are easy to identify in the first place, but you're going to see less of teams trying to find the 280, 285 pound guy who can shoot a gap and go get a TFL. And maybe every once in a while, they design a running scheme that allows him to cut off of that defensive tackle and get a big play through the hole that he left open because of his gamble. And we're going to see more teams that are going to try to get your 300 pound guys that are kind of noses, kind of three techs, really just kind of gap eater types that allow you to play in your nickel shells, that allow you to play in your dime shells and take away those interior gaps in a way that helps safeties play more two deep shells and in turn allow your linebackers to play with a little bit more range and not have to, you know, be as stressed out in terms of their division of labor between fitting the run and playing the pass.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy because it's obviously a passing league and the defensive discourse is you should get pass rush juice out of your defensive interior. But I think a practical example of that backfiring is Dallas this past year.
Right.
Dallas just could not stop the run.
Right.
And they're very light on the interior. And we talked about Dan Quinn earlier, but basically all of Dallas's defensive value last year came off of forcing turnovers. Like,
right.
Like you said, like playing that the country zone, getting vision on the ball, making plays on the ball, but just down to down, it's hard to live like that. And
right.
As you said earlier, high variance does not favor defense. So right. It does sound like we're talking out of both sides of our mouth a little bit, but you have to be able to, like, you have to be able to enable the other areas of your defense through the interior. Because if defense is a weak link system.
Right.
So if you're having issues with that stuff, it has ripple effects throughout. And now we're venturing dangerously close to, like, you have to be able to stop the run during the right to rush the passer and all that old school stuff.
I mean, and it's, but there's some truth and some honesty in that,
yep.
Right? Like,
oh, I agree.
You know, Cleveland, I'll use Cleveland as an example defensively. That's another franchise that for multiple years has prioritized pass rush and coverage talent over building up the defensive interior. And for the last 2 to 3 years, they've really struggled in terms of playing successful run defense, right? Not just giving up explosive runs, but the success rate that you surrender on a down-to-down basis. Obviously, Dallas is another example of that. The Seahawks went and traded for Leonard Williams because they've struggled with the defensive interior for a few years, right? So that's a major piece of this, right? I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan. This team, that's a team that struggled to stop the run last year. And what you saw was them playing more five down fronts and giving up even more explosive offense as a result, because they had to invest so much of their resources, so much of their schematic approaches to stopping offenses, to getting guys up on the line of scrimmage to try to take away interior run gaps, right? So that's really, all these things are kind of tied together, right? Like, we know how much value an edge rusher provides. That will probably be true forever in football. We know how much value a shutdown corner provides. That'll probably be true forever in football. But the spine of the defense now has to be considered in a way that it did not have to be before. And because, you know, certain teams have not prioritized getting in the right kind of size, the right kind of play style, and the right kind of rotational pieces at that position, they have a really difficult time finding the balance between taking away explosive passes and not just getting, you know, 5, 6, 7 yard chunks taken out of their defense on a down and down basis in the run game, right? That Packers game against the Cowboys in the wild card round was a great example of that, of a team who just went 12 personnel, knowing that Dallas did not have the bodies on the interior to handle it. And the more that they had to invest into trying to stop the run meant the more airspace they were going to get in the play action game. And that's why that team was so successful at really taking advantage of Dan Quinn's defense.
Yeah, it can be hard to parse this stuff statistically because you're not necessarily looking at all the plays in sample. A lot of this you talked about earlier, a team showing a bunch of air fronts, the third time it happens on the drive is when they get popped. And that's all it takes sometimes. And so I think there's a relationship there, but it can be hard to find that needle in the haystack, so to speak, and establish a correlative relationship or a causational relationship, I should say.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where defense gets really interesting to me, right? You talk about all this variability and you talk about all these different things you want to do in order to take away explosive passing game. And then you get to stopping the run, and it's hard not to build homogeneous defenses out of that, right? Where you're just saying, hey, we want to get big body defensive tackles, play four down defense, just play single high every play because we know we're going to have more guys than they can block, right? There's a lot of merit in doing that to stop in the run. Or, you know, you can be like a Brian Flores type, and we're just going to send the most unconventional blitzes all the time and try to play for penetration and get TFLs. It's just that's a hard world to live in if you're not completely committed to that on every down. And a lot of teams aren't. Teams are trying to build themselves up to be able to get after the quarterback with four. And if you're trying to get after the quarterback with four, you've also got to build a defense that allows you to stop the run without having to put more guys up at the line of scrimmage, because it costs you in other ways in the passing game. So it is a difficult needle to thread to confirm what you're saying.
Yeah, the Brian Flores stuff is interesting because it's completely different from what basically everyone else is doing, right?
Right.
Like I need to study it more this offseason because I didn't watch a ton of Minnesota in season, but it's just a lot of like the mug looks, unconventional pressures, a lot of zero, at least relative to league average, doing weird stuff like spinning one high into two high. And it's another way of attacking sort of the personnel deficiencies. So we've got to create, we don't want to do this, but, or maybe they do want to do it. I don't know. I would love to pick his brain on it, but they weren't the best team in the back end. And if you just play honest, so to speak, over time, that will hurt you. So you have to do something to regain value somewhere. And we said Dallas is like that, but Minnesota attacked it a completely different way, right?
Right.
Dallas is what you're talking about, like four-man rush. We're going to play vision coverage when we can and create turnovers, and Minnesota was more like, we're gonna just be chaotic.
Exactly.
Okay, I think we covered a lot of good ground. Do you have anything else, any final thoughts before we sign off here?
I don't know if I have any hard fast thoughts. Like, to me, the thing I would part with is where my interest is at going forward, and it can sound a little bit reductive, but I'm really fascinated to see how teams that are not built to be like 3-4 defense where you've got a lot of versatile guys. I'm really kind of fascinated to see how more of your traditional four down builds. So you think about like New Orleans, you think about Chicago, you think about Cleveland, you think about Houston, teams like that. I'm always fascinated to see what these teams look like on early downs, right? Because you're going to see less variability up front, which puts more pressure on these teams on the back end. So like that's where my, from a coaching perspective, I'm always so fascinated in that, right? Because playing a 4-3 defense, as old as the dinosaurs, right? We've just had a bunch of different type of iterations of it. I want to continue to see where the evolution is on that side of the ball in that particular kind of way. Because the one thing that I do think that like your odd front, bare front teams have as an advantage is the fact that those defenses are built to get you in and out of whatever kind of defense you want to play versus being built with two hand down edge rush types and having to use more of your second level, more of your safeties to be involved to take away what offenses are doing. So I'm always fascinated to see what that is. But, you know, that's something that I think we'll have to continue to look at data wise in terms of like rolling averages throughout this era of football.
Do you have a prediction or maybe like a thesis statement for what you think those 4-3 even front teams, whatever you want to call it, do over the next couple of years to evolve? And maybe, I don't know if it's necessarily like a problem. I don't know that that's the right word for it, but do you have a sense for what adaptations we might see going forward?
I really feel like we're just going to see less of the traditional 4-3 defenses, right? Not that the modern offense is going to run that out of the league as much as the body types that are coming into the league and the best ways, I think, to go about stopping spread offenses are going to work out in a way that disincentivizes teams to build a team the way that like New Orleans is built. And we're seeing a lot of that anyways, because not very many teams are playing that old school, big edge, you know, 270 pound guys, stuff that's reminiscent of the early 2000s, right? We're seeing less and less of that as is. And we're seeing more four down teams adopt the Jim Schwartz, you know, approach to defense and playing with your wide nine, more 3-4 outside backer type guys, are just smaller, speedier guys, long arms that you would used to see like in your bare fronts and your odd front type of defensive build. So that's where my mind is at, is just like trying to see how long those defenses are able to hold out against the modern offense.
Do you think that we eventually see a paradigm shift in offense back to maybe the way it was in like 2006, where we're still a passing league, but right now it feels like it's like almost like 2/3 passing and we're getting close to that. Do you think as a result of some of these changes that we see on defense that we get not a regression to the mean, but we sort of return to tradition, as Justice Mosqueda would say?
I think that this upcoming year is going to go a long way. Is going to be an important data point. So that's going to go a long way to answering that question, right? I kind of have my eyes like really squarely pointed at like the Rams, right? Which is Sean McVay, who comes from as old school an offensive approach, you know, having coached under John Gruden for however long, right? And his offense is able to kind of weave in and out of whatever world it wants to be in. And we've seen him take those old two-back, you know, old Shanahan outside zone offenses and apply that to 11 personnel in ways that wasn't being done at the time. When you think about 2017, 2018, and 2019, right? I think that if we see bigger bodies on the offensive line, the way that they're built right now, and they're able to really start pounding teams in terms of downhill, you know, zone and gap runs, we might see more teams adopt that. And then we'll be looking at something that's a little bit more reminiscent of the era that you're referencing in terms of tactics, just from a more spread out perspective. We may see less teams that are interested in trying to play RPO football and all that, and more teams that are going to try to get under center and 11 personnel at times. Or if you're going to play spread, you're going to play it with condensed splits and really try to mash teams in the running game and force those safeties to continue to walk up, force teams to continue to think about having to drop, you know, safeties closer to the line of scrimmage, to be able to open up those explosive passes. That's where I'm really kind of interested in seeing where the game goes, is whether or not modern offenses are going to be able to run teams out of their two deep shells, or, you know, get teams to think twice about playing so much quarters and leaving open gaps in the interior, you know, or playing odd front and bare front defenses to walk guys up, and seeing whether or not, you know, seeing where that variant, that new variance will be at, and whether or not there's enough explosive runs that you can find in playing that way that are going to make defenses think differently about how to play on early downs.
The Lions are kind of like that, because the Lions love to throw digs. They love to throw overs. And if teams live in quarters against you, that can be hard to do.
Right.
And so the Lions are sort of zagging, and they're doing all this exotic run scheme stuff to, and they get value out of it. But they also, part of it is just trying to open up some of what they do in the passing game.
Right. Same thing for Miami, right? Like, they have a very particular attack, you know, plan of attack, both in the running game and the passing game. It's something that not everybody can replicate, but they can get spread out with, you know, more traditional two tight end or two back personnel, hit you with outside zone and use their speed if you're over invested in stopping outside zone to really punish you in the play action game. So there are going to be, I think that we're going to see more variability in run games going forward than we will in the passing game on the offensive side of the ball because of how defenses are playing right now.
Yeah. We said we were going to wrap like 20 minutes ago, and we're still just
going. My life, man. This is my life.
Well, I don't want to monopolize all your time, and I don't want to get too long-winded with it, because we're starting to approach a different topic entirely. So maybe we can save it for another show sometime. Deontay, you're a rock star, man. Tell us, for people who don't already know, where they can find you and your work.
You can follow me on Twitter at Deontay Lee FB. You mentioned it at the top of the show. I'm currently freelancing for the 33rd team. Going to continue to try to find a long-term home. Then my next long-term home, whether it be in a multimedia space, working for a team, you know, we're kind of weighing a few different options for me and football, man. But you can follow me on Twitter at Deontay Lee FB. And if you hit me up, I'm always open to talking ball with you.
Love it. Appreciate you a lot, man. For my good friend Deontay Lee, our executive producer Justin Stein, I am Bryce Rossler. Thank you for listening to this episode of the SIS Off the Charts Football Podcast. We will see you next week for another draft podcast.